Welcome to Church Drunk, a spirited conversation about faith, reason, and libation.
Tickle, 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 my cubes and ice.
So, we had a bit of a week off. There was, life got crazy.
Oh my gosh, so much illness.
There was illness, there were retreats going on, there was all kinds of stuff. You know,
Lent
gets crazy. But we are back, and it is the beginning of Holy Week. And before we tell you all about that and then some, a couple of reminders about life here at Church Drunk. We tend to be a bit cursy, sweary, potty mouth. So if you got kids in the car and you're listening to this out loud, then
turn it the fuck off.
Reconsider your life choices. And on top of that, we tend to be more on the heretical, blasphemous side of things when
That's
you look at the large spectrum of people that live in this universal church,
especially those
that
is
the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm.
And we're Catholic. We're part of that big universal church, but you don't have to be to appreciate, hopefully, some of what we're throwing down. So all are welcome. We're glad you're here. We're happy to be back on the airwaves. Do you call a podcast being on the airwaves?
I mean, there are waves
the
in the
internet
airs.
Waves.
I've never thought about it.
Yeah.
But we're out there.
I am guest here with my co-host Dizzy, and
Hello.
We always start off asking, Diz, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking something that I was quite hesitant about, much like some of our other things we're talking about today, but have come to really enjoy.
Yes.
So this is an icy. Yep. Icy cold beverage.
Oh, icy cold. I was like, that's not what we're calling it.
No, I'm sorry. You were calling it a peach iced tea.
Peach iced tea, yeah.
And it has peach moonshine, which dear guest thought was maybe like liqueur and then looked at it's 80 proof.
No, 80 proof.
It's good stuff, guys. It's great. So, and I also have some Irish whiskey in there.
A little splash of Irish whiskey.
And just
some black walnut bitters.
Warm it up, the black walnut bitters. Just to remind guests of all the good things that nuts give us.
About your bitters. Yeah.
Oh, that's punny. And a little splash of fizzy water because it's my drink.
Yeah, you're just topping it up.
And how about you?
Since you have the ice, I'm bringing the fire.
Woo!
So I went with a bit of a Rausch beer. So it's a smoked German
Rausch
alt beer.
Beer.
So it's very, very tasty.
Hmm.
It's a tip of the cap to a very exciting event going down tonight. So we're recording on Sunday morning and Sunday evening.
Passion Sunday.
Yes. Let's talk about all of those things and get it out of the way because Game of Thrones starts tonight!
Yes. Holy Week is doubly holy.
Extra Holy Week.
Well, there are some parallels. I mean, this as much as we love Jesus and as much as we love Game of Thrones, they do kind of dovetail well.
Jesus Snow.
I mean, Jesus was not a bastard, technically speaking, because, like, Joseph claimed him. But
Right.
What would be, like, the Galilee name? You know, like, they have, like, the rivers and the snows.
It'll probably be, like, sand, right?
That's, like, Dorne, then.
Yeah.
The lake.
Fish? Salt?
Yeah, salt. Salt. Well, okay, so smoke and salt.
Smoke and salt.
Mm-hmm.
Ah,
that's kind of what you're drinking.
Yeah. So just a heads up before we jump into it. We will be talking about Holy Week, which is a lovely thing. And then we will transition from there into talking a bit about Game of Thrones. There will be spoilers for the last several series of Game of Thrones. So if you are like, I'm going to watch it all together at once, then when we hit the halfway point and we're like, so that reminds me of Game of Thrones, that's where you're going to want to cut us off today. Listen to
Fair
it
enough.
Later.
And if you haven't heard the whole Jesus of Nazareth story. Spoiler alert. Holy Week is going to blow your mind.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Just check us out later.
Crazy.
We're talking about that too.
He was so nice, but then, I don't know.
Everything's going so well if you started today.
Yeah, and then he starts flipping over tables. Shit gets cray.
Oh my gosh.
So let's talk Holy Week. So today is Palm Sunday / Passion Sunday because our church can't make up its mind.
Where the fuck did Lent go?
I know, seriously. Like, Lent was just there and then gone.
It's gone.
And every year we bitch and moan about, like, how long Lent is. And
we're
this
really
year,
the worst.
I actually blame you because you kind of had a Lenten resolution to not complain about how long Lent is.
I think I broke that,
and
but yes.
And it was just,
was
like, blink of an eye, gone.
Well, you know, we're not usually, like, guys, we've had the fucking plague around here.
I know.
Like, I think, like, days were lost.
Yes.
In, like, figurative desert, you know, blitz in the brain.
I just
couldn't even be awake.
To, like, somehow we managed to record, I think, two podcasts, like, in the windows between, like, my
various illnesses.
You were, like,
almost
illnesses.
Off your deathbed and then almost back on it on those in-between days.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't fully blame us. And that's the thing about the church seasons. Like, they come back next year.
Yeah.
If this was not our best Lent because you had the plague and I'm broken. Like, we're going to try again. Yeah. And it wasn't the worst Lent. I just feel like we usually get more out of Lent from yes. ourselves. Like, this is not Lent's fault. It is not Jesus' fault. This is just what happens.
I think usually at the end of Lent, I feel either really, like, refreshed, having kind of, you know,
done a bunch
yeah. more of spiritual practice than I normally have the discipline to do in my everyday life. Or I feel, like, really depressed because I'm, like, I'm just yeah. such, like, a pile of sin that, like, I don't even know what to do with myself.
Right.
But I feel neither of those. I feel exactly the same as I did at the beginning of Lent.
Well, I think that we've also been in a bit of a perpetual darkness.
Yeah.
Just, like, societally. Like, that's been weighing on us. And church-wise, True. Like, it's hard to go deep into darkness when you're already kind of living there.
Mm-hmm.
So now this just feels like reality to us. Like yeah. it's lost some of its perspective. I don't know.
Yeah.
We also didn't love our book. We were just not hitting those strides on that. Like
we just didn't quite yeah. click sometimes. Yeah.
yeah. Yeah. So it happens. We tried.
Yeah.
We showed up.
We will. I think we should, once we, you know, have a chance to finish the book, cause mm-hmm, we're, mm-hmm. you know, we're into it now. We kind of yeah. did a little bit of a preview of it. And then once we finish it, we can do that probably on the other side of Easter.
I haven't finished it, so
and yeah,
my final review may be more positive.
Exactly. Yeah. So, but we'll come back to that. And but yeah, it feels like all of a sudden here we are, Palm Sunday, and Holy Week is starting. I haven't really done a whole lot of preparation for Holy Week. I haven't really done Lent justice.
Okay. Yes, but aren't you kind of excited about Holy Week?
I am.
Like
yeah.
I
well,
like
it's so
I don't
late. How could you not be excited
true,
about Holy Week? Like,
true.
Jesus,
we have been waiting.
Took us forever.
Yes, but like I'm sitting here being like I'm kind of excited it's Holy Week. Like Lent went by in a flash, and yeah. that's kind yeah. of a bad thing. But also, like I'm pretty stoked.
Yeah.
I really like Holy Week.
I walked into church
kind
today,
happy about
and
it.
They had a beautiful display of palms that were kind of like arching over the central mm-hmm. walkway, and I was like, oh, like something special starts
yeah.
now. You know, like this is a time of not pure celebration, but it's. You know, it's that conflicted zone that you and I just feel so comfortable
so
in.
So chewy
like,
and delicious.
Holy Week is starting. Yay! And then it's like, Good Friday.
Yeah.
Fuck Aww. This. And yeah. then Easter, you know, right. like, which is a beautiful celebration. So it is, it's something special. And around the world,
it
as we've talked about in previous episodes that kind of focus on Holy Week, around the world, Holy Week is a big deal. And it's
yeah.
kind of exciting to be part of that big deal.
Well, this is the only week where I will go into a church this many times in 1 week.
Yeah.
Like, just that is different. And yeah. the ritual of it and the same every year. And, like, not a lot changes, right?
Right.
Usually in how it's celebrated. You get to see all the people who, like, suddenly come to church and everything.
I know, yeah.
It's kind of fun. It's festive.
That was the other thing. Was
I'm
I
down
walked
for
into
it.
Church and there was this beautiful display of palms and I was 5 minutes late. And I had baby Guess and Mrs. Guess, and then it was like, oh, everybody showed up to church today. That's cute. There's no seats for us.
Aww. Did you have to stand?
We did, but baby Guess okay. wasn't really down with listening to a homily anyway. So we were taking turns for which one
Blame
of us was
on the baby.
Cruising around outside.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. So Palm Sunday or Passion Sunday. What is this? Like, I don't recall as a kid it ever being Passion Sunday. In my
yeah.
head, it's Palm Sunday.
It's definitely Palm Sunday. And it's like everybody, you know, you get your palm when you go to church.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we did it if the church did it when we were kids or if it's a relatively recent development. But there's the reading of the whole story of the Passion with like
right.
a choral reading part of it
yes,
where everybody
there are
chimes
voices.
In. And just mark me down on the record as being way fucking anti- choral reading of the Passion on
Why?
Palm Sunday.
Why?
A,
what
it
else are you
going
to do? It's so long.
B, you don't even understand what everybody in the church is saying because
oh.
when people try to read collectively without ever having practiced reading collectively, everybody just goes at their own pace and it's just a muddled freaking mess.
Okay.
C,
okay.
you have a narrator whose only job the whole time stands at the pulpit and goes, and Jesus said, and the crowd said, and Pilate said.
That's how you
fucking
keep track.
Annoying. Cut out that narrator if it's just going to be dialogue.
Oh my gosh. I have...
D, there's somebody standing over, with
Drink.
Over with the choir whose job it is to be Peter and go, I do not know this man. I do not know this man. Who the fuck are you, Peter, from the choir? Like, get, like,
that's
the,
four.
The whole thing is just a mess.
Okay.
I hate it.
I think your parish does not do a great job about this.
Because
mine was delightful.
No parish does a good job
okay.
of this.
A, we don't have anybody in the choir awkwardly just being Peter. B, our priest explains it to us all and tells us the page number and is like, sorry. Literally, he said, sorry, you got the nasty bits. You have to be the crowd. So we all paid attention.
so stupid.
C is that it's so forking long that we need something to entertain us, which is our part. It's like when you're reading in class and the only reason you're paying attention is to know when it's your turn.
I've got an idea. I know it's revolutionary, but on Palm Sunday, read the Palm Sunday
Gospel.
Doesn't
your church do that at the start?
Yes.
We had to hear both.
But
and
why not just have that be the gospel?
And then I am confused by that.
If you would like the passion story, you can go on Good Friday.
Somebody.
You can like say, I'm taking the day because this is a religious holiday for me, right? This is my Rosh Hashanah, my Yom Kippur, my
it's
day
not
to
any
go.
Of those. And,
but,
okay.
You know, like it's a holiday.
Sure.
It's a religious holiday that Catholics have every right to be able to take or Christians and say, I'm going to a church service instead of to work. If that's really what you want to hear.
Is that why we read the Passion on the Sunday? Because people won't hear it on Good Friday?
No, Good Friday's not a holy day of obligation, right? So I would imagine that they want everybody to hear the story of Jesus dying before the following Sunday, which is for the resurrection, right?
Okay.
But it's dumb because you already know that Jesus died.
You already know
how
Spoiler
Jesus
alert.
Died. Yeah. Like, it's just silly to me to be like, let's do
this. I don't like the double reading, and I never got why we were reading the Passion on Palm Sunday. It's a bit rushing of the story.
Right.
Because then we're going to be like, never mind, back to the Last Supper.
Now, however, if you step outside of the liturgical context,
sure,
it is rushing the story in that, like, we go from Palm Sunday to Good Friday without mentioning much about,
Holy Thursday.
It does include the story of the Last Supper in the Gospel reading.
Right.
So you get the whole shebang. But I think that the sort of thrust of Palm Sunday going so quickly from praising Jesus, welcoming him into the city, and then all of a sudden calling for his death, that does get something right in that, like, that is kind of the way that it's laid out in the Gospels. Like,
so wait,
Jesus
you like
triumphantly
it
enters. No, I said, if you step outside
of
a liturgical context where there's real people with shit to do on their Sunday,
it's a beautiful day.
Then I think that, like, that, because that has always been something that struck me as odd. When you read the Gospels, when you study the story of Jesus and what happened, there is this triumphant entrance, and yet immediately after that, there's crowds that have turned against Jesus. And I think when I was a little kid, I, like, wondered about it, and there was kind of, like, this nebulous answer of, like, well, you know, sometimes people do strange things, but, like, the reality of it is, like,
politics.
They were expecting Jesus to do something, and he didn't do it, and so they all basically said, fuck you, Jesus, we don't want you anymore.
Well, and in the Sanhedrin and all that, like, I think that does represent the political nature. Like, they weren't down with him. Like, they were pretty happy to be like, oh, you're on our turf now. You can say whatever you want up in Galilee. Nobody cares.
Right.
You come down to Judea, you're playing with the big boys, right? And that doesn't always go well.
Right.
And Jesus is like, that's what you think.
Well, yeah, and Jesus kind of knew, right? You don't go flipping over tables in the temple without expecting some sort of retribution.
And he's got, like, the best call out, you know, like, in the garden where he's like, you've been seeing me all week for days and days out in public, and you're coming in the dead of night. It's like, ooh, good burn, Jesus.
Right. Yeah. So I think that the whole thing speaks of kind of what we were talking about before we started recording, like the idea of the prophecy of the Messiah, who the Messiah was supposed to be. And then not quite measuring up, if you're Jesus, to what people had expected of their Messiah. Like, and that's why people were willing to take, like, Barabbas, who, again, when you're a little kid, Barabbas is like this bad man. Yeah. Barabbas is a murderer. But then you grow up and you're like, he's a revolutionary. He probably killed, like, a Roman or something like that. And so the crowd was like, this dude's a hero. Like, this
we'll
is who we expected the Messiah to be. Someone that would start this bloody revolution.
Well, and, you know, so we're talking about prophecies and, like, depending on Matt or Luke, who you're going to read, the emphasis put, but, like, throughout Lent, and now we're reading all this Isaiah, right? Mm-hmm. All this prophecy about somebody who's coming. I think the reading for Palm Sunday from Isaiah is, you know, about giving them your clothes and, like, giving them your back and your beard to be plucked like, all this brutal stuff. And just saying, like, hey, like, this is what was prophesied, you know, and get prophesied. I like seed.
I like prophesied instead of prophesied.
But it's a prophesy.
I know.
Okay. So... Anyway, you know, all this stuff is told, right? So there's kind of the argument both ways where the Jewish people are expecting a savior in the form of David, right? They want a military hero. They want somebody who's, you know, well-spoken and charming, and he's going to kick ass.
Right. And you only want that sort of prophesied Messiah that is willing to, like, turn the other cheek or, you know, offer his cheek to have beard plucked and all this kind of stuff. You only want that, like, in the right situation at the appropriate time.
Or did they even know about?
Or were they even really looking for that? We have, you know, had the benefit of 2,000 years to kind of stitch it all together and figure out how the prophecies point to, you know, one thing or another. But, I mean, like, I think you know, if you go back to David, which is really who they were expecting, right, of the line of David, a great warrior.
Yeah.
But also, you know, someone who had, you know, one minute was cutting off the foreskins of 1,000 Philistines, and the next minute was showing some sort of actual compassion for people and you know, was able to keep both of those things in balance to a certain extent.
A leader of the people and well-beloved and also a strong warrior figure.
So someone who you would look to as both strong and, you know, occasionally willing to take on some suffering for the good of the people.
And I think those were, like, normal and natural things for people to want. Like, of course you want your savior to be acting like a savior, not being like, here's how you do it.
Right.
Let them fuck you up.
Right.
And know it's going to be good for you later. Like, that's rough. That is that's a hard pill to swallow.
Totally.
And it was hard for Jesus to swallow.
Yeah.
Right. Like, he didn't like that. There's the very classic line, right? Like, I'd rather not do this.
Yes. Dear Dad, how's about we pick a different route?
Yeah. Change my mind? Yeah. Any other way?
Sweating blood.
Let me out of it. Right. Yeah. Throwing himself upon the ground.
Right. So it's not, like, the easy path to take, but it was very much, like, from what we can tell,
right,
and, you know, there's only so much we can tell, but it was the one that Jesus knew was in front of him, right? Jesus sort of knew all along, like, they're not going to like what I have to say. Like, my words of just pure love and compassion will be so hated by people that I will be killed, and that won't be the end of the story, right? Like, that's kind of what he said
and
to people.
Willingly enters, goes down, you know, to Jerusalem, to the south, the hotbed of all of it. Like, he knew where he was going.
Yeah.
To walk into that dangerous area.
But to the people that were living under Roman occupation, who were waiting for a revolution to begin, or in some cases trying to start a revolution on their own, like not waiting for a Messiah to come and saying, we're just going to do it now, or thinking that they had found a Messiah that was going to lead them in a revolution, right? Like, there was a Messiah on every street corner at times when they were, you know, in this part of their occupation and this part of their history. So it was like, a lot of people thought John the Baptist was the one that was going to, you know, do this for them. His head ended up on a platter. So, you know, like, there's a whole back and forth, and Jesus can kind of see the whole arc, knows that he's going to be put to death, knows that his job is not to fight back.
Right.
But nobody else saw that, despite the fact that he kept
all
telling
them. All his followers are, you know, especially the dudes, are very suspicious of this. They and even us as, like, the audience, right? Like, we read this and we're thinking, like, just tell Herod something good.
Right.
Like, get out of it.
Yeah,
like,
just
right?
Say,
like, if you're into
the
story, you're like, you don't want this to happen
either. Or Pilate's saying, you know, are you the king of the Jews? Are you this? Are you that? And he's like, well, if you say that I am. Every time he says that, I'm like, God, stupid Jesus. Just, like, dude, say something
nobody
different.
Wants you to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you had an out and you didn't take it. You know, but, I mean, in the garden, right? Like, he's being arrested and there's Peter, like, chopping off ears. Like, now the revolution begins, right?
I'm
and Jesus
ready, Lord.
Is like, no, it doesn't
also, you're
going to
deny me in, like, a minute.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fucking Peter.
Peter. Crazy pants. So there's this whole sense, I think, in the story of Palm Sunday. Maybe I do like it. Maybe I'm coming around. Maybe we need to tell the whole story on Palm Sunday. I don't know.
It's a big juxtaposition.
Yeah.
It's a lot. I do like telling the story of him coming into Jerusalem.
Right.
There's lots of promises there too, right? Yeah. Like, you know, especially if you read Matthew's gospel, it's very, you know, there's a promise about him coming in on a colt, right?
All the imagery.
All the imagery is really making the Jewish audience, the Jewish reader, think back to this promised Messiah. And so it is nice to contextualize the story. I don't really like that we zoom to the end so quick there.
Yeah.
We'd like it to last a little longer.
Yeah.
more about the teachings and the temple time and all that.
That's never been my sensation on Palm Sunday during the choral reading of the Passion Story. I wish this would last a little longer. Never thought that.
I wouldn't read any of that that day. Right,
exactly.
Yeah.
No, I think you save that for later. And for the people that really want to, like, do the whole process of Holy Week and go to Holy Thursday Mass and go to Good Friday services and go to the Easter Vigil, you know, like, they'll hear that whole story. And for the rest of us, we know that whole story.
Right.
If you're not going to do all of that stuff, you know, like, anyway.
So
this is the part.
Promised Messiah.
This is the
doesn't
part,
quite live up to it.
Yeah, right? This is the part where we start to maybe draw some threads to what's going to be happening tonight.
Yes.
Because as we talk about promises and messiahs and the coming of people who have been foretold and all sorts of things, it does point towards the premiere of Game of Thrones.
Right.
So this is where if you haven't watched it and you want to, like, get caught up later on, pause, turn us off.
Yeah, and catch you later.
Yeah. But for those of you that are super excited and you've watched it all and maybe read the books, oh, sweet Jesus, the books. So
fuck
long.
You, George
and still
R.
Not
Martin.
Done. But then it does kind of work out really well that Game of Thrones premieres on Palm Sunday / Passion Sunday.
I mean, it is a passion of ours.
It is. Well, and it feels at times like you are going through the Passion of the Christ watching this shit or reading it for the love
of God. There is some pain and suffering. Okay, and we don't know the ending of this story. So
we're going
to focus today, on the
prophecy
part because there's a lot that kind of dovetails, right?
Yeah.
So Game of Thrones, credit where credit's due, awesome world building.
Yes.
And you know, they do a good job of having, like, stuff that happens early and then it doesn't really all come together till later. Come together to make this really profound.
And there is a whole mythology that surrounds it.
Yes.
And we talked about that in previous episodes about, you know, kind of
the religions.
The religion, the religious
of the world of Game of
it.
Thrones.
Yeah. There's so many stories being told.
Sidebar, you know, the Lord of Light.
Yeah.
What's it called? The
R'hllor.
R'hllor. Yeah. I mean, kind of a dick.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Like, don't love him?
No. Yeah, well, like the one that still commands human sacrifice.
I don't think they're the good guys.
No.
The children of the forest, like, I don't even know if that's a religion. I don't know that they're the good guys either.
I mean,
are the seven the good guys?
Bad guys?
I mean, they're just kind of all of us. Like, I don't know who's the good guy in this story. And
well,
that's kind of different than the Jesus story, right? Because now we know. And I don't think anybody ever thought, like, Rome was the good guy.
No.
Right?
Well, like, Romans did.
Sure. But, like, who are Romans? Like, in Palestine, just imports, right? Like, there's nobody, like, local. They might have thought, like, oh, the Sanhedrin's okay, or, like, I like the Pharisees.
Right.
If you like the Pharisees, stop. That's what the message of Holy Week is.
Like,
another sidebar upon my sidebar.
Yeah. but also, I think maybe we've talked about this before, though. Like, look at today's world. Who are the Pharisees?
I know who they are.
My hand might be being, like, partially raised.
Oh,
like, there's
I don't
more,
think we're the Pharisees.
I
within
don't
the church?
Think, not within the church,
no.
but within
okay.
the world.
Within the world,
right?
Perhaps.
Like,
yeah, damn. Oh, look at Gaz making me, like, question myself.
Yeah, no, like, I mean, I do think,
because,
like,
I focus on the church Pharisees where I'm like, stop it with your hand washing, put down the lace. Oh, my God, there are poor people.
But that's, see, like, I think if you look at, you know, the if our world is the world of, let's say, Game of Thrones, right? Then by living in the United States, we live, like, in the whole, like,
we're in Judea. We're in Jerusalem.
We're in Jerusalem. We're in the Red Keep. We are in this higher sort of elevated, like, socioeconomic kind of place. Or we might not be in Jerusalem. We might be in Rome. Like, we are at the hub of wealth. You know?
True.
And you and I and a lot of people that live in the United States may not, like, buy into the indulgence of that, but we're also immersed in it.
Oh,
so,
for sure.
Like, there's
we
no
benefit
way,
from
yeah,
it.
Like,
100%.
Yeah. And
well,
so,
that's what I think. We might be, like, the average, like, Jewish people there, though, but we're not, like, the Sanhedrin. We're not the ones who are deliberately making that last.
You know who we are? We're, to go to a different series of books.
Gosh.
We're District 1. Right.
Oh, we are District 1.
We're District
1. We're so
one.
Pretty, you guys.
And the Mockingjay is out there fighting, and we're like, you, oh, look at you. And we're watching our televisions with our fancy hair.
We cry.
Yeah. We're District 1.
Oh, my gosh.
You know?
I feel like we should just wrap it up right here. Everybody, I need to go have a really deep thought about being District 1.
Which leads to a moral conundrum of, is it a sin just to live in District 1, right?
Well, like, yes and no, right? It's a sin to live in District 1 and not give a shit about other areas and not try to help. And, like, we vote on, like, District 1 and we try. Yeah. You know, we didn't choose to be born here.
Hunger Games, by the way. We just transitioned out of Game of Thrones and into Hunger Games.
No, I'm sorry. If you are already listening this far in and are putting up with us comparing Jesus to who knows who in the Game of Thrones.
Right.
And you can't, you know District 1.
Yeah.
Hunger Games. It's pretty good.
Bringing it back around, though. Looking at Game of Thrones and the prophecies that have been involved there. And again, spoiler
lots
alert.
Of prophecies.
But there's the big one, the overarching one, right? The, the whole series is called Song of Fire and Ice. And Song of Ice and Fire.
Wow.
It's just because I'm drinking the fire. I think of that one first.
Ice and Fire. That's what I drink today, everybody.
So, you know, there's who will be the ones to occupy the Iron Throne or the one to occupy the Iron Throne? And is it going to be this ice and fire combo that is the foretold everybody points to
probably
Azor
thinks Ahai, the prince that was promised,
right? And so for a while they thought it was Stannis Baratheon. That was who the Lord of Light was on his side,
and they
right?
thought, well, not that because the Lord of Light, I mean, the Lord of Light's kind of even new to the story, but because he had won against the Targaryens, right? And like united the kingdoms and all this, but that didn't work out.
Well, that was Robert that won that.
Oh, and I'm sorry. Stannis, I was thinking of Robert.
Stannis was his brother. So like it went straight to like him as the next in line for the Lord of Light, right? This new religion.
What was the other brother? The like hot gay brother.
Oh,
what
yeah.
What was his name? There's a third brother, Baratheon.
Flash in the pan, Baratheon.
Damn.
Who was that?
He's gone.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they thought that one maybe too.
Loras? No, Loras was the Targaryen.
That was his lover.
He wasn't a Targaryen. Jesus, there's so many characters
in
this
stuff.
No,
he was from the girl who they married. Gosh, we need their names better. Yeah. Shit, we're not as good as we think
of this. We didn't think we were going to be talking about that at all. Let's talk about the prophecies, about ice and fire. So the obvious choice of ice and fire would be Jon Snow and Dan.
Especially, like, so this was kind of, this was a big focus in the books and in the shows of, like, who is Jon Snow?
Right.
Right? Like, who is he really?
Yes. Because the idea that he was Ned Stark's bastard son never really had much traction. Because that's not who Ned Stark is. That's not what Ned Stark would do.
But everybody believed it, including his wife. Like, shame on her.
Right.
But he's not. Although he is philosophically, right? Like, he acts like Ned Stark. Right. And that is a guiding, like, moral principle for him in a world where there is
Because he is a Stark, right?
He is a Stark.
And that was the big mystery that was revealed last season was the actual nature of Jon Stark as a son of ice and fire, right?
Right.
So there was the Northlands of ice and the Targaryens fire that came together to make Jon Snow.
So he has them both within him. So like that could just be it. Like Jon Snow is the Song of Ice and Fire.
Yeah, it. Which would leave Dany out in the cold. If
he also came back to life. Like there's a lot of sort of redeemer qualities about Jon Snow.
Yeah. But then, so if you move away from Jon Snow and Dany Targaryen as, like, the two primary people that could be left sitting on the throne, the one that I would love to see on the throne, and I said there's, we were just talking about this, I'm like, but there's no way it's going to happen because it's not an ice and fire add-up, would be Tyrion Lannister. Like, I would love to see him, like, just sitting in that giant throne and be like, ha-ha, now it's mine. But I don't think it's going to happen because no ice and fire. And yet then you swoop in and say, well,
there is this whole theory, right? And I don't believe this. I'm not in this camp, but it's a big enough theory that I've heard about it. Right. Which is Tyrion a Targaryen?
Yeah.
He could be like that's a deep dive into like how that all could work. It explains some things, but I think it's just too neat of a package, too much of a reach. Well, everybody loves Tyrion. He is a military genius and all that, but I don't know that he is the prince that was promised.
The two things that point to him being potentially a Targaryen would be, number one, he's like, you know, a little man.
That happens.
And they all, but like when I heard that, you know, and I had forgotten about it when we were talking about it earlier, but first heard the theory, it was like, well, like the Tyrians were always like inbreeding. So him having
or the Targaryens.
Physical, or the Targaryens, oh, yeah. They were always inbreeding. And so like him being physically deformed might be a reflection of that. But also like the dragons are down with Tyrion. The dragons don't light
them
up. Oh,
that is a good point.
Right?
But like, they also don't light up Jon Snow. Like we are probably going to see Jon Snow riding a dragon.
Right.
Like... Well, they like him.
Because Jon Snow being son of Rhaegar, Targaryen, that would make sense. Like,
and the one that he could ride is Rhaegal because Viserion is now an ice dragon and Drogon is Dany's, like, you know, love dragon. Mm-hmm, so that leaves him Rhaegal, and that is a strong connection.
Yeah, right? So, you know, there's possibilities there.
I can't handle any more dragons being hurt, though.
What I know.
Are we cool? Or is that going to be safe, you think?
I don't think so. I don't think anything's safe.
I think everybody's going to die.
I don't think anything's safe. One question, speaking of people dying.
So we don't think it was Joffrey.
one thing, no. Well, so this
friends that was promised.
Points back to a loose end that needs to be wrapped up, let's say, and wrapped up hopefully in some sort
another
of,
theory. Go ahead.
I was going to go with a loose end that needs to be wrapped up in a really excruciating fashion, which is Cersei Lannister. Like, she has to die, right?
Sure. Like, and this comes in where I'm like, what about, like, her supposed current pregnancy?
Right.
Could that be... I think it's Euron. Well, whoever from the Iron Islands that she hooked up with, that could be, that's cold up there. That could be the smoke and the salt thing. Because that was also for the Promised Prince, right? Is a smoke and, born of smoke and salt.
Born
so, like,
salt.
He could be the salt.
Right.
She's the smoke because
or
she likes wildfire. Like, fucking.
Is her baby A, non-existent and she's bullshitting everybody? Or
true.
B, Jaime's? In which case it would be fulfilling yet another prophecy about, like, because Cersei had a lot of prophecies as well, right?
That
she
that
visited
would...
the old crone, and it was like, all your children will die, and all this kind of stuff,
right?
So now she's got a new bun in the oven. If it's Jaime's, it would fulfill the prophecy that the younger brother
would kill her.
So it could be Tyrion, but it could be Jaime.
Okay, and that same old prophecy with the old crone told her she'd only have three.
Right.
So I think she could just die in childbirth.
Yeah.
Which
would be Jaime.
Or before this
her.
Child is born. Yeah. I mean, I'd like Jaime to kill her. I'm not going to lie. I think that would be a really nice full circle.
Yeah.
Because she's really gotten worse and worse, and he's gotten better and better. Like, we all like Jaime now.
Right. And then, so another prophecy, another very kind of like interesting avenue to explore. Is Bran Stark.
I was going to say, Bran could also be, I think you have a better argument than Tyrion for sure with Bran.
So.
But Bran's like, he's creepy.
He's not fun
anymore. What's going on with Bran?
Yeah. As soon as he like got to that tree and he met the three-eyed raven and then became the three-eyed raven and then went home, he's kind of like zombified.
I just don't know. Like, he's going to, okay, so in the last end of the season, we saw him and Sam talking about having... to tell Jon Snow.
Right.
Right, about this.
Yeah, because he knows.
Like, so I kind of like Bran and Sam together. Like, that might humanize Bran a little bit.
Yeah.
I think he's kind of lost to us.
Yeah.
There's another theory that Bran is, like, somehow related to the Night King or is even the Night King.
Yeah, because he's one of those wargs. He can kind of move around, but he's, like, now he's, like, an uber warg because as the three-eyed raven, he can inhabit, like, other bodies of his
and
choosing,
wasn't
sort
him,
of.
Like,
and
so inhabiting Hodor, like, unprecedented.
Yes, and that was...
that, like, points towards him as like something different,
right
is the king that's the prince that's promised going to be something like Bran, who's not on the Iron Throne but like rules the world in a different way, although that takes away a lot of agency.
Now
I don't know,
I just thought of something here, and this is because there's in the back of my mind there's always been like, but like the White Walkers are pretty much unstoppable, like how are you going to take out the White Walkers? I'm sure there's going to be some sort of revelation, but the other alternative, and this would be very George R.R. Martin, is just the White Walkers win. Like, they take over, and the Night King sits on the Iron Throne, and the Ice and Fire is the dragon that became a White Walker dragon, and all of a sudden, here we are with, like, bleak desolation.
I mean, I don't put it past him.
You have a whole kingdom
like
of White
new
Walkers.
Series, The White Walkers.
Yeah,
like the old story is gone.
There'll have to
people.
Be like infighting among the White Walkers for who's gonna like win the Iron Throne after that. Like that would be the sequel. That'd
I don't
be
think
weird.
They even die.
Zombies fighting
I think
zombies.
Rule forever.
I know, right? But that would be like
damn.
Yeah, and then maybe the Red Lady calls down the comet that blows everybody up. There's so many threads in this shit.
I hate Melisandre. She's so awful.
She's terrible.
Well, right. Like, her baby wasn't the prince that was promised. We know that little smoke baby.
Smoke baby.
That was gross.
That was gross. That was actually, if you go all the way back to the very beginning, the birth of the smoke baby might have been when you were like, oh, this show's fucked up.
That's when? Not like the first episode where, like, Jaime and Cersei are banging one out and throw Bran off a tower? That's not the point.
No, that part was totally normal. I was like, ah, whatever.
Oh,
just another HBO show. Man. Well, it'll be interesting to see a few things. Number one, obviously, all the stuff that we talked about, who's going to sit the Iron Throne, all that. I'm interested to see just how long the episode is. Because back in the beginning, when they were saying that the next season's going to be the last season.
We don't even know, huh?
They were like, well, but it'll be the last season, but we're not set on like 1 hour episodes. Like, it could be.
They're just going to do the story.
Yeah, we're just going to tell the story in whatever space we need. So I'm interested to see how, like, if they restrict themselves to an hour at a time or. If they tell the story maybe like kind of in the way that the books are where it's like different chapters cover different characters or like there's a lot of things that need to be resolved because there's just so much left of the story.
Yeah, we need all the info. We need to see all the people we like. Mm-hmm. I'm not a fan of just some characters now and then, although I know there's so many they have to split it up. Yeah. But that didn't work so well the last two books.
Not that George, you're still bitter about that.
So bitter. Like, I really have a hard time letting it go. I feel betrayed.
Yeah.
But I'm excited to watch it. And we know we'll see what happens with Jesus this week.
Yeah.
There's a big supper on Thursday.
I know. Yeah, he's going to have a great dinner, great party. Oh. And then maybe do a little bit of dying.
Yeah.
And we will probably, I'm guessing, maybe hit up like a Triduum church trunk.
I think
this
we could
week.
Do that. We do like
since
the
we missed
shortest
a week.
Season.
Yeah, and hit up something during those three special days and then be back for Easter time.
Yeah, we're going to talk about some sacrament stuff and Easter. Yeah. Our reader who wrote in had some great questions about the sacrament season,
we
so we're going
to
talk
need
about that.
To come back to MVP.
So we promise we will not turn into a Game of Thrones podcast. We just really couldn't resist today with
especially,
all the princely promises in church and on HBO.
The Messiah that was promised.
But we'd love to hear from you. Yeah. What kind of Messiah do you want on Game of Thrones? And what do you think about the one we had in Jerusalem?
Yeah. Hit us up with an email, churchdrunk@gmail.com. Hit us up on the Twitter account,
at churchdrunkpod.
And feel free to check out the blog. Stations of the Cross are going up very soon. Lenten reading
just
list.
Just in time to pray them on Friday.
Yeah. So take a look. Check it out. Let us know what you think. And we will see you in just a few days as we hit our Triduum stride here on Church Drunk, where I prophesy another adult beverage in our future.
Made of ice and fire.
Cheers.
Bye.